Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
Hey there, it's Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk Podcast. I'm so glad that you are here. This is where we celebrate you, the industrial professional, the companies that get things done. I am your industrial cheerleader. I am so glad that you are here. We have a wonderful show this week. I can't believe a week has gone by again. It just goes by in a flash. We've got a gentleman by the name of Mr. Amir Gahan, and he's going to talk a lot about transformative leadership. But before I get into that, I was thinking this week, and you can join me in this thought process, is how do you stand out? And I was just contemplating, thinking about how easy it is to get information. I had some issues, so you know, you sit there and you search it and you find it, and in a matter of just seconds, if anything, you're able to find an answer to your questions and get solutions ASAP. And it's a wonderful time we live in, and all this information that's out there is free. Now some, of course, cost, but for the most part, incredible content is free out there. Free for the taking, free for just the growth of your profession. And being an older guy, I realized that in the past, that just didn't happen. When I was growing up, it was difficult to get information to a certain extent. If I had to go to the library and get that information, I'd have to search it and go and spend some time and do all of that. We don't live in that time. We live in a time where this information is available. And so, as such, how do you stand out? You stand out by constantly thinking about how to educate yourself with, bettering your thinking, your speed to decisions, whatever it might be. The information is out there, and it is available. And so, quite frankly, there's no excuse. There's no excuse to better yourself. We see memes out there. These memes inspire. But what fascinates me about memes, I'd have to say 99% of the memes that get posted out there have no action behind it. Meaning, I've seen memes. I've been, motivated by memes. And I got to tell you, sometimes it's just the fact that, great meme. I feel good about it, but I go back into my same habits. Here at Industrial Talk Podcast, we try to provide content that is meaningful to you. And this week is no exception. We've got a gentleman by the name of Mr. Amir Gahani, and he's got a tremendous amount of experience. And he comes to us with 31 years of experience. He has dealt with large companies around the world, Procter & Gamble, Campbell Soup, and so on. And he has developed a book called Transformative Leaders, Boldly Declare, Courageously Pursue, and Abundantly Achieve the extraordinary. And he's a phenomenal man. And just like anything else, it's available. So you can just listen, and the interview, you will be changed. You will have a sense of at least learning. And I really appreciate it. And here is our friend, the founder of Gahan Group, LLC, Mr. Amir Gahan. Well, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. And I am so fortunate to have as a guest on the Industrial Talk Podcast, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Amir Gahan. Hey, welcome, Amir.
Thank you, Scott. Great to be here.
Hey, great to have you. And I know that you're a busy man. You've got a lot of things going on. And you found time in your schedule to be on the Industrial Talk Podcast. And we are absolutely honored. Now, Amir, tell me a little bit about who you are, what you do, a little bit about your background so that everybody can sort of level set on where we're at.
Sure. Again, it's a pleasure to be on your podcast. Scott, I've listened to some of your other shows and really enjoyed them and have learned a lot from you and your guests. And so as far as I'm concerned, basically just my background, I spent about 31 years in corporate world, basically in variety of roles. I have a a background in mechanical engineering, but I learned very early on in my career that I have a particular passion for energizing and empowering my organizations and working with teams. So I've been doing that kind of work regardless of what sort of job title I had. I've been doing a lot of organizational effectiveness work for 31 years. And as of last year, I started my own company, the Gannat Group, where we do consulting and speaking on leadership development and culture transformation.
Yeah, and he's humble because his corporate experiences have included Procter & Gamble, Campbell's Soup, large companies, and once again, he is very humble, and I'm sure that you don't have a long, lengthy career without adding value to these wonderful companies. Now, you indicated that you just started your business, and, well, you're about a year into it, and you're busy, from what I understand, because I had a hard time getting on your calendar, which is really a good thing for you. That's wonderful. But you sit there, and you said you talk about consulting. Tell me a little bit about, if I'm a company, which I am, and I'm an owner, and I'd say, hey, I don't know if I'm getting the most out of my, I want to impact the bottom line. I want my people to be happy about, because we live in the world that people have to be happy about their company too as well. How would you approach me, and how would you start to help facilitate a transformation in my company?
Yeah, Scott, a lot of my clients approach me because they want me to come and speak at an event. I do a lot of keynote speaking and kind of shorter workshops, and I do private workshops for companies as well. But sometimes they want more than that. They want some consulting. And one of the first things that we do is we conduct a couple of calls just so I can understand a bit more about what's going on with the company. And quite frankly, what I'm doing at the same time is gauging to see what leadership of that company is all about and what they're interested in.
So what would you ask me? I mean, let's get right down to the nubs. Okay, Scott.
Exactly. You know, so what I'm trying to sense from you is, are you just trying to dip your people in something because you think they are the problem? And if that's the case, then we have a conversation about that, because I want you to be interested in, first of all, transforming your own mindset and accepting responsibility for the fact that you're leading these people and you've got to have a certain kind of mindset and behavior and things like that. But assuming, and again, I've been very fortunate in working with a lot of really great clients, and assuming that you kind of pass that test, if you will, and you have your mind in the right place and we get to work together, then what I do is I don't have a cookie cutter kind of one size fits all model that I reapply to everybody. I have certain principles I work with. I have certain models I've developed over the years. So what we do is we set up a meeting where we sit down and do an assessment, basically usually with the leadership team, to see what's going on. And then I conduct several interviews with other people outside of the leadership team. Then we come back together and come up with a strategy around how we're going to approach this culture transformation.
Now, do you have that hard conversation with me? Because being the, let's say I am an owner of another company as well.
Yep.
Being that guy, and you're going to say, Scott, your mind is wrong. You're looking at your employees in the wrong way. And here are the reasons why you're looking at the employees. Do you have that conversation? Do you sort of, in essence, drop the hammer on the owner? And have you ever had to do that?
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. I believe, you know, many years ago, I made the mistake of taking on a gig. I was working, at a company, but I was doing some things, some professional facilitation on the side on vacation days. And I took on a client, and I knew right up front they weren't really the right kind of client. It just didn't go well. So that one experience was enough for me. And so what I do is what I call spicy coaching. Okay, so if you
said spicy as in hot,
spicy
and,
as in like okay. It stings, right? So, but years ago, I used to have I would give my clients a choice between mild or spicy coaching, and then soon after that, I took mild off the menu because I'm like, look, you're paying me to really make a difference for you. And sometimes that message I have to deliver to you stings a little bit, but that's what you need. So I'm all about having an open dialogue, and it's all in the spirit of supporting you, not to just beat you up or anything.
And I don't like your message, yeah. So have I let you go because I don't like the spiciness? I wanted more mild. Are you finding people willing to take that spicy message and accept it and move on?
Yeah. So, I mean, I spoke to a group of 120 CEOs just yesterday, and I told them up front, I said, look, I'm going to get in your face a little bit, and nothing I tell you is the truth. I'm just asking you to consider it. But I do want you to consider it. And please understand that if I'm giving you something to think about and you think about it and it hurts a little bit, then the work's got to start with you. You cannot just bring me in to train your people.
Do you find that spicy approach, because I agree with you on that. I believe that cutting right to the chase is important, but I find that it's a factor of time. I don't want to sit here, me personally, don't want to sit here and just listen to platitudes when I'm here wanting solutions, wanting change. Do you find there's a greater acceptance and time is everything for me?
Yeah, and I think this is what separates a really great client from the rest for me, because those who are really interested in making some change happen within the organization are willing to do that. But Scott, I think I have to say there's an art to delivering spicy coaching. This just doesn't mean you just hit people between the eyes with all kinds of mean things that you're going to say, right?
Oh.
And the way I say it is I always compare it to a Chick-fil-A lemonade. So you might say, well, what does lemonade have to do with coaching or leadership? I always tell leaders, I say, look, if you've ever had a Chick-fil-A lemonade, you know that it is delicious. And the reason it is so great is because it's got a lot of lemon and a lot of sugar. It's really rich. And so leadership and coaching has got to be the same way. What lemon represents in that lemonade for me is your willingness to be courageous, to be straight, to hold people to high standards.
That's you. Or is that from the management's perspective? Are you saying that for me personally, I've got to be courageous and straightforward? Or are you trying to impart that on managers and say, hey, you've got to be straight and courageous and straightforward to your people?
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, as a leader, you got to be that way. And as a coach, I try to behave the same way. Is you got to have the balance of courage and consideration. The courage to really deliver a stern message and be straight about it and hold people to high standards, and the consideration, which would be the sugar in the lemonade case, that says, look, I'm doing this because I care about you. I want you to succeed, and I'm going to set you up for success in case of a leadership position. I'm going to recognize you, I'm going to develop you, things like that. So as a coach, I try to emulate the same thing.
I love the analogy, Amir, on spicy coaching, and you are the first individual that I've ever come in contact with that used a Chick-fil-A lemonade as an analogy of lemon and sugar, and because I tend to be more lemon as opposed to sugar, and maybe in this dialogue I'll be a little bit more sugary sweet, because I'm always about time, and it's like and what's interesting is when I interact with somebody that's professional like you, and you are very skilled at what you do, I tend to be more just like, tell me now. I don't care. I am bald. I am overweight. And I just don't care if you tell me that. Just make it happen. I got to go work out. And well, I can never grow hair. But
yeah.
So I would imagine you come across people like that, and you would probably adjust your approach, because for me, I don't have a real dog in a fight. You tell me what I need to do and I'll do it.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the relationship. And it's important that communication is receiver-based, not just sender-based. Like, this is how I communicate no matter who you are. My relationship with you, your style, your inclinations, whatever is specific to you has to be taken into account, obviously. But here's one thing I will tell you. Those people that I have a lot of chips in the bank with, and those people that I have a really great relationship with, I don't have to worry about changing my style. I can be myself and they can be themselves, because we have accepted each other for who we are. And then we don't have to worry about all the lemon and sugar and stuff like that. And that's why relationship building is so extremely important.
Yeah, I hear you. And as I take notes, because I am taking notes, what I'd like to dive into a little bit more, Amir, because you mentioned it a couple of times, and I would like some sort of concrete points. And I always try to whittle it down to three. You can do four. You can five. Whatever these points. So when you come and contact me, you conduct that call. You talk to me, and you say, I've got some principles, and I've got some models. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. And on the other side of this break, we're going to start to expand a little bit more, get a little bit more detailed in what that means.
Yep.
And we've got Amir Gahan. He is an incredible leader. He's got some incredible conversation, and we're going to dive in. So stick with us. Do not go away. And we'll see you on the other side. Hey, once again, this is Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk. If you like what you're listening to, please feel free to sign up for the free podcast as well as the blogs. I'll try to keep it all relevant to your business and hopefully be able to provide some insight into what we do at Industrial Talk and what you do as a professional. Hope to see you soon. Thank you. Welcome back, and thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. As we were breaking, Mr. Amir told me that it's Gahan, not with the H, which it has it in there. And so that's just me being me, and it's Gahan. So Amir Gahan with the Gahan Group. So I'm sorry about that, because I'll butcher everybody's name, and you're not
the first one, and you won't be the last. That's all right.
Oh, good. I'm a part of a bigger group. Thank you. I want to be a part of the bigger group. Okay, so what we've done is we've talked a lot about Amir's background. We've talked about how he goes in, and we talk about lemonade and the balance between having that candid conversation, that spicy coaching. I think those are great analogies on how you would approach an organization. And before the break, we were talking specifically about getting into some specifics about principles, models, and I'm looking for 3, 5, whatever points that people can hang their hat on and saying, okay, I'm listening to Amir. He says this, and cut right to the chase, because we're all about time, and I do not want to waste anybody's time. We want information. We want that quality content that people can turn into action. So with that, talk to me about your principles there, Amir.
Yeah, so let me give you three principles, three key elements, and I'm going to dive right into exactly the process that I follow, Scott. There are three things that I want people to be real clear about, what it takes to really create a high-performance organization, is that first and foremost, we want to focus on delivering and sustaining superior results. This is not some sort of a kumbaya experience and stuff, even though it really does involve a lot of relationship building. If it is not about delivering some extraordinary results, then ultimately it's not going to work.
I'm not going to be happy. If I don't have that sustained transformation, I'm not going to be happy. So,
well,
good.
Not even just as a leader, but even the people in the organization. If they have a bunch of bosses that are really nice to them, but they don't really see this going anywhere, people are not going to be happy. They're
not
going to
be
satisfied.
No, there won't be.
Yeah, so that's number one. Yeah, it's got to be about delivering extraordinary results. The second thing is ongoing leadership development capability building has got to be part of the plan. So this is something that we've got to do across the entire organization. We've got to constantly develop leaders. And the final thing is this culture transformation that we talk about really is not a project that can be given to a group of people. It's got to permeate the entire effort, the entire organization. In other words, it's an integrated approach. So let me tell you how I kind of bring this about when I go into an organization to work with them and they say, look, we want to shift our culture. We want to deliver the results. The first thing that I do after I've had some preliminary conversations and have had some conversations with people outside of the leadership team, I get the leadership team together. We spend about a day or day and a half together actually to do this. We basically come up with a vision of what is it? What are the results that the organization really wants to get? And we write those down not just from a quantitative standpoint, but also from a qualitative standpoint. In other words, we get into what is that vision from standpoint of the culture, the behaviors that we want, all of that kind of stuff. So many organizations make the mistake of constantly, even in this process, they want to just focus on solving today's problems.
Well, we live in a world, Amir, that we look at finances on a quarterly basis. That's, I mean, geez, exactly. My receivables, I always look on a weekly basis. And if that's not where I want it to be, I sit there and I just, that's the world we live in.
That's right. And that's how the human mind kind of works, right? I put in my book this distinction between change versus transformation, because most of us are in a change mode where we're just trying to solve today's problems. And every time we apply a solution, there is a side effect and we create another problem and we never really experience a major shift. But the approach I take with organizations, I say, is like, look, independent of today's problems, let's paint the picture of where we want to be. And now some organizations do that for 3 years from now, some for a year from now, whatever. But let's step out into that future, define it, and stand back there and look back and say, look, if we want to go there, what are some of the key milestones that we have to hit? What are some of the key things that need to happen to make it happen? So we identify those.
So you reverse engineer. You're saying, hey, this is what we want to look like. We want to look like lollipops and all that good stuff. Well, this is what our organization needs to look like in whatever the time period. And then you reverse engineer to say, these are the goals. If we want to be there, we need to be here.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so that so far, I mean, a lot of people do that. But one of the other things that we do then is we do this force field exercise where I go up to the board and I simply draw a vertical line. And on the right side of it, we write down everything about the culture that is actually propelling us toward that future, whatever it is about today's culture that is really working for us. You know, we have great people, we have this kind of resources, we've got this kind of knowledge, we got these kind of tools, we have this kind of behavior, whatever. And then on the left-hand side of that vertical line, we write down everything that's pulling us back, everything about our culture, our behavior, our mindset, our lack of skills, everything that's holding us back. So if you really look at this and imagine that there's a rubber band on the right-hand side of this thing that's pulling us toward the vision, but then there's another rubber band on the left side that's holding us back. We kind of check this out to say, okay, which one of these is kind of a different version of a SWOT analysis.
Yeah.
What are some of the strengths that we have? What are some of the weaknesses that we have? Then we, as a team, pick a few of these cultural attributes that we need to go work on to make the most impact.
Do you find in that particular exercise that there are more bad than good? There are more things on the left side versus the good things on the right side that are propelling you to the vision? Do you find that in your workshops at manager's level? And I can imagine, because managers do that, I find the bad. I don't see the good, but I find the bad. And so your left side force field analogy is much longer than your right side.
I think you're right, Scott. I think most of us are trained to look for gaps, look for opportunities. So therefore, our tendency is to put all of those things down. But what I found is that, you know, when I facilitate people through this exercise, we end up coming up with a bunch of things on the right-hand side that we've just kind of taken for granted, and they could really be a huge asset for us. But once we do this exercise, then we get a kind of an idea of what kind of balance we have, and we identify some very clear things. I'll give you a very specific example of this, right? So just from my own experience, I was a plant manager. My plant was delivering the worst results in the company, and our culture was the only thing that was worse than our results. And our morale. So it was really terrible. So one of the things that we identified was we said, look, we have a two-class system. We have haves and have-nots. And because of some of the behaviors that have been exhibited in the past and all of that, some people feel like they're just button pushers. They come to work to do their eight and hit the gate, right? And then there are a handful of people who feel like they're leaders. So one of the things that we identified was that we just really want to eliminate this dynamic. And I noticed immediately that we had two entrances at the plant. One was the nicer one that had carpet on the floor and all kinds of paintings on the wall and everything. And the important people, quote unquote, came into that entrance. And then everybody else, let's just say people working on the floor or whatever, went through some dark and dingy entrance. And I'm like, what the heck is that all about? Well, you know what? It had been there for years. And then what the rationale was, well, you know, people work on the floor, have grease on their shoes. And I'm like, that is ridiculous. So what we did was we immediately changed that. It was an immediate shift that the next day we said, no, everybody comes through the nice entrance. What happened was it clearly sent a signal to the organization that we're not just talking about this stuff, but we visually changed something. Now, it doesn't mean that overnight people say, oh, you guys are nice, so you're... No, they were still kind of watching to see if we really meant business. But what happened was it really sent a clear signal. So what I do is I work with organizations to identify those very clear sort of artifacts that they can shift immediately to send a signal to the organization that they are serious.
That would be the qualitative side. I mean, we're always just in the quantitative. I mean, I'm a big data guy and I love data and I want to see data. Qualitative tends to take a distant backseat. So you're talking there about qualitative. Now, I have to pivot here, and it's like, okay, this is all great. You're dealing with all these managers, and we're in a room, and we're having this great idea, and we're listing all the goods and the bads, and we want to do. But you know as well as I do, in this world, they leave. People move. Yeah. There's a lot of churn when it comes to that, and they're going to find a better and greater opportunity. How do you, number two is an ongoing leadership building. How do you address something like that?
Yeah. So this is, first of all, let me address the quantitative and qualitative. It's been proven, if you really look at great places to work, this company that identifies best places to work every year, they look at three components. They don't come in and look at your maintenance systems and your MRP systems or anything like that. What they do is they're looking for three things. Do people trust their leadership? Do they have camaraderie? And do they take pride in the work that they do? Trust leadership. Do they have camaraderie with each other? And do they take pride in the work that they do?
Interesting.
And if those three elements are present, then these companies over the last 20, 30 years, it's been proven that they leave their competition in the dust. But people always ask me, they say, well, wait a minute, what about those hard systems? You know, what kind of maintenance program you have in place? What kind of accounting system you have? I'm like, look, those things are extremely important, but guess who's running those? It's either people who trust their leadership or don't, or have some kind of camaraderie or are working in silos or take pride or don't really give a hoot about their work. So that's where the qualitative work really makes a difference. But ultimately, we start working on the very specific systems, obviously, that are delivering the results for the organization. But you asked about the ongoing leadership development. To me, I take a twofold approach, Scott, because when I first started doing this work several years ago, my focus was strictly on leaders because I could see that there are too many bosses out there and not enough servant leaders. So I developed a whole bunch of material and conversations that was really helping those folks. But then I noticed that every time I spoke somewhere, people were like, yeah, I get this, but my boss doesn't get it. So I figured, look, I got to develop some stuff to support those folks to say, look, your boss may not be perfect for a while. So here's how you can empower yourself in the face of a situation where your boss is not very empowering and stuff like that. So I take a twofold approach. I support leaders with to become more of a servant leader, but I also support the rest of the organization. I have all kinds of training sessions that I do, and with many of these companies that I work with, we actually put those in place. We do it in waves, where we put people through the training so they have the same language and they begin to speak a language of transformation throughout the entire organization. And it's amazing what it does.
Well, we're going to have to break on that positive note. We've got one more point, and I'm going to let you off the hook there, Amir, on about the culture is not a project, which I'm very intrigued with that. So hang tight. We will be right back with Amir Ganad. Did I say that? No. Ganad.
You got it. Amir Ganad.
Stay tight, guys. Everybody, we'll be right back. Hi, this is Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk. I like to learn, and I like to have fun. And when I can put them both together, learning and having fun, well, that's a match made in heaven. That's why I put together a drawing for a Louisiana fish excursion, as well as the 2018 Mardi Gras once-in-a-lifetime event. You can find more about this information, about this two wonderful opportunities, at the Industrial Talk website at industrialtalk.com. Welcome back, and thank you very much for sticking it out with the Industrial Talk podcast. I know it's easy because Amir is very engaging, and he's got some incredible content that I think you could take to the bank. And once again, we talked about the principles, which are pretty cool stuff. We got one, delivering and sustaining the results from his workshops, very important, both qualitatively and quantitatively. And then, of course, having an organization of leadership building, which is predicated on trust, if I'm writing this down right, camaraderie, and pride. And that leaves number three, Amir. Talk to me a little bit about the culture is not a project.
Yeah, Scott, I think, what I've seen is there are some organizations where leaders don't necessarily see the value in culture work and all of that. So we won't even talk about that. But then there are some organizations where the leader really wants to do something with the culture. They recognize that it's important. And what they do is they identify a group of people. And sometimes they call that kind of like empowering people, putting it in their hands, but they then sort of absolve themselves of the responsibility and they dump this on a group of people to go work on the project.
That happens all the time. Just FYI, that happens all the time.
Absolutely. I see it all the time. And these are well-meaning leaders. And what I say to them is, look, you cannot look at this project, look at your culture transformation as a project. You've got to simply look at everything that you do. And if you've already painted a picture of the kind of behaviors you want to see within your organization, then you ought to examine everything that you do against those principles and those behaviors. And you've got to see what you need to do differently and what everybody else in the organization needs to do differently. So it's not some, if you think of a chest of drawer, if you will, culture work is not just in one of the drawers. This is something that is the entire thing. It permeates everything.
But once again, and I love what you're saying. I think that's really important. There's two things that I've got to ask the question. Yep. You, Amir, what do you, and don't say 50-50 because that is not an answer.
Yeah, sure.
Do you look at, in your work, are you more attracted to the qualitative side or are you quantitative focus?
Well, and this may be just as bad as 50-50, but let me try it.
Yeah.
Because I always start with the qualitative. Because as I said, culture work and creating a high-performance organization has got to be about some very specific results that you want to produce. Otherwise, it's meaningless. But what I know and what I've learned is that the key to making that happen is always through the creation of the right culture. So I always start with and focus on the results, and I keep my eye on it, But the way I get to do that, look, Scott, here's what I'm going to tell you. Everybody wants to be a high performance organization. I have yet to speak to an organization where people say, no, no, we just sort of want to be a mediocre performance organization.
Right.
Everybody wants to be it. But let me tell you, the process of becoming it is something that not everybody is willing to commit to.
No, it's one of those things where it sounded good in an MBA program, and then somebody started spouting it off and then saying, hey, we want to be a high-performance organization.
Yeah.
But the blood, sweat, and tears associated with the necessity of making that happen, that yeah. commitment is not there. And it's always great to say that because you're right.
Exactly.
Everybody wants to be one.
Exactly. Like, I want to be Mr. Universe, but when I figure out what it takes to become that, it's a lot of work. And in my book, The Transformative Leader, what I do is I actually share 33 distinctions between a high commitment culture and a traditional culture. I also spell out something like 11 sort of counterfeit behaviors that people exhibit. They kind of try to make it look like they're transformative leaders, but they're not. So like creating a vision that is only focused on whack-a-mole, you know, solving
yeah.
problems. Well, that's a counterfeit behavior. So really there is a kind of not a recipe, but certainly a framework for creating a high commitment culture that if you're willing to sign up for, then you can go make it happen.
We're gonna wrap it up, and you mentioned something specifically about a workshop. Please tell everybody about your workshop.
Well, we do quarterly workshops in Atlanta, and this is a 1.5-day transformative leader workshop that we put on, and then for 3 months we support our participants with webinars and coaching sessions and all kinds of different things that we put in place. So it's a 1.5-day seminar that we do. And we normally have about 7 or 8 companies present. We cap the participation to 14 people because we want this to be kind of an intimate conversation. But then we also do private workshops. Many times people come to the public workshop, kind of bring me in to do a private workshop for them, in which case we customize it even more.
What's the cost on this workshop?
Yeah, the public workshop costs $649 for the basic.
Per person?
And, yeah, per person, mm-hmm. yes.
And are you looking for managers or well. what's your...
Actually, the really
makeup?
Interesting thing is, look, what I work on, what I do is what I call transformative learning as opposed to informative learning. The difference being that I'm not trying to put some knowledge on you. I'm trying to cause you to have some realizations that will cause you to use whatever knowledge you already have. Now, you're going to learn some new things, but the main thing is that you're going to be empowered. So I've had people in the same workshop, I've had people who have worked on the line on third shift and through all the ranks to CEO in the same session. And everybody walked away. In fact, we've had 100% of our participants have said that they would recommend the workshop to their colleagues. So there's no particular target, if you can imagine that. We have people from all kinds of levels and layers in the same workshop.
Now, give me a date on this thing again.
Yeah, so our next one is in Atlanta on November 9th and 10th. We still have a couple of open seats for that one, mm-hmm. and we'll be wrapping up the registration on November 1st.
Now, you have all the social platforms. They're all out there, right? You've got a LinkedIn account.
Sure.
You've got your website at The Gannad, and that's that has an H in it, everybody. That's G-H-A-N-N-A-D Group. GROUP.com. Now that information yep. is out there. And are you
yes.
on Twitter?
Yes, I'm also on Twitter at Amir Gannad.
Okay. And then you've Facebook?
Yes, I'm also on Facebook. So I believe I'm Amir Gannad there as well. I think I'm the only Amir Gannad out there.
Yeah, I didn't have a hard time finding you. Let's put it that way, because it's
yeah.
It's good because there's if your name is John Smith, oh no,
yeah,
good luck finding
well,
that individual.
Yeah, there are some perks to having a tough pronouncing name. I always tell people, Scott, one a funny story if I could share it. You know, yep. I had a client who called me one time, and he said, "Look, we went to such and such event because I speak at the Shingo Institute events and OPEX events and stuff like that." He said, "Man, we wanted to bring you in as a keynote speaker, but we couldn't remember your name. And we finally found you." So anyway, I went and spoke there. And when I came back, I immediately bought the URL called whatwasthatguysname.com. And I always tell people, I say, look, if you don't remember my name, you're thinking, what was that guy's name? So all you have to do is go to whatwasthatguysname.com, and that'll bring you to me. So.
No kidding. That's good, man. All right, man. That's smart thinking. Only in this world we can come up with that. That's fantastic. Now we're going to close on out. I really appreciate your time there, Amir. And just remember,
my pleasure.
The door is always open. And everybody who's listening, get his book. It feels good in the hands, you know. It's all good. And it's called The Transformative Leader. And it's Boldly Declare, Courageously Pursue, and Abundantly Achieve the Extraordinary. His daughter did the graphics on it. And I got to tell you, it's pretty doggone cool. So go out, get that. And, hey, thank you very much. I think the listeners are going to gain a lot from this particular podcast because we're all about content. We're all about sharing that information, and we'll get you back on because I want to know why you decided that this was a career path for you. But that is for another show.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You have a wonderful day. Thank you very much for joining, and thank you everyone for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. I will be right back.
I'd like to thank Mr. Amir Ganad. The H always set me off in his last name. It's Ganad. He's got a workshop in Atlanta on November 9th and 10th that will be highlighted his transformative leadership book as well as all the other wisdom that he can impart upon you. Thank you for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. I hope the content was meaningful. And everyone who's out there, have a wonderful week and be safe. And continue to learn. Do not let this week go by without learning some more stuff. It's all out there. It's all available. And don't live in a world of regret and not having to participate and continue to learn. So have a wonderful week. And thank you very much once again for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We will talk later.